Good evening. I look around and I see in all walks of life, there are people who seem to have been born with a silver spoon in their mouth, so to speak, while others seem to never catch a break. Some people are extremely smart and can understand anything that they read or see or hear, while others need a play-by-play picture book to learn how to tie their shoes. Why is it that some people are given great talents and abilities and others are not? Talents such as the ability to sing. I know everybody can sing, but not everybody should, right? We can
all sing, but to really be able to sing well, some people just have it. They're just natural, or even song leaders.
What about athletic ability? Some people have a little, some have a lot, some have an abundance, and then there are some people that have none whatsoever, or not even care. Musical talent, that's another thing. I'm always impressed by people who can learn to play a musical instrument, and some people can just pick up anything and they can play it, and if they've ever played one instrument, they can cross over and play others, and some have no musical talent at all. In fact, I've been accused of being tone deaf. And that wasn't by a doctor. It was by somebody that heard me whistling. And so that was kind of rude, but it is what it is, right? Some people are extremely good at everything they do. Some are really good at two or three things, and others are pretty good at a lot of things. And then there are some people that are just really not good at anything. I think that there's something that everybody's good at. They just, not everybody has found that knack. You know, they haven't found the thing that they're really good at. Because when you see there's some people that just, they really can't do much of anything, but they have one thing that they really excel at. And so it's just the way we are. How is it that there are so many different degrees of talent and so many different degrees of blessings in people? And I thought about this, and I thought about, well, what is it? You know, sometimes we may be jealous or envious of those people who have those greater skills and greater talents. You know, I certainly wish that I had musical ability or athletic ability, but does it really matter at all? And I know that most people who sing and play musical instruments, at least those people who are religious, believe that they are literally preparing for a place in heaven where they will sing in a choir or play in a choir. Most of the worldly people anyway, worldly religion, they believe those things. So, but what is it that the Bible teaches us? One of the things that the Bible teaches us is that we're somewhat in a race. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1 and 2. It says here, "Wherefore, seeing we are also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God." Well, so the Bible teaches us that we're in a race, right? Society teaches us we're in a race as well, but the race that society teaches us we're in is called the rat race, right? We're in a rat race. Well, I've never seen rats race. Maybe it's because we're all rats, right? We're all a bunch of rats. No, not really. Kind of close, but we're basically all competing for a prize. It is said that this, I looked up to try to figure out what the origin of that term rat race was. And the very first thing that popped up, it says, nobody really knows where this originated. The very next one says, this phrase originated in 1909, and then everybody's got their own opinion about it. But the best explanation I found was a bunch of rats being put into a maze, and they're going through the maze to try and see who gets to the cheese first. And the cheese is a really worthless prize, but it's something that they needed for life. In other words, they're struggling for the prize that's worthless, but it's life-sustaining, and they're still at the mercy of the person that designed the maze. And so the rat race being people in business, you're working for the man, right? Not God, talking about the creator of the businesses, right? And I thought, well, that's not a bad description. But we think about that. Reality is that the race that is mentioned in the Bible is that space between birth and death
when we all seem to be working our way through life, and there are various things along the way, there are sometimes we look at things, and I can tell you this, when I was early in my life, I could see where my future was going. There were certain things that I knew that one of these days, I knew of one thing, one day in my life, I'm either going to be working with guns, or I'm going to be working with cars. I was fascinated with cars my whole life. I've never worked with cars, and I don't care to be in the car business whatsoever. I thought I was going to be there. One thing I never thought I would be is standing in a pulpit before you. It never crossed my mind. I never had any, not at all, not even the whim of thought that I would ever end up as a preacher or preaching the gospel. So we go along life, and there's sometimes we take different turns because we want to take those turns, and sometimes we just happen to miss our turn, or life came at us fast and that road was closed and we had to take another turn. And that really works out, though, whether we like it or not. Sometimes it works. Sometimes we keep it from working when we should be letting it work. You should let the things go and let it work. Some figure out what the actual goal is and they set their mind on it, while others are too distracted by the cares and troubles of this world even to care about eternity. So they go through and they're so eager on, so bent on just fulfilling the here and now that they don't prepare for eternity. And the Bible is full of warnings about this and tells us over and over about getting caught up in the cares and trouble of this world. Matthew 4:19. Those people are referred to as a seed. There's a parable of the seeds and the sower. The seed that grows up but then is choked out and never makes it to being productive. And that's the people that I'm talking about here. He's actually describing people. Mark chapter 4, verse 18 and 19. Mark chapter 4, verse 18 and 19. And these are they which are sown among thorns, such as hear the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches and the lust of other things entering in, choke the word, and it becometh unfruitful. So you wonder sometimes why some people, they join in with us, or they come and visit. Next thing you know, they're baptized, they obey the gospel, they become members of the church, they become Christians, but then something happens and they disappear. They quit coming for a while, or they start going somewhere else. Well, we like it over here better. They don't say anything about our attendance, or they don't preach about this, or they don't say anything about, or they, whatever the case may be, we find that some people go away. We can understand why when we just look at the parable of the sower. In fact, they really would be good to, or do well to, look at the parable of the sower as well and see, is that me? We all should look at that and say, do I fall into any of these categories? Am I the one that finally produces over and over and over again? Because that's where I need to be as in this world, in this race, if you will. I remember reading a bumper sticker one time that said, whoever dies with the most toys wins. This is funny and brings a grin to our face, but it's also sad because the mindset is true. This is the way many people think. They're all out to try to get, chase wealth and chase the accumulation of material possessions. We're all guilty of it in some way or another. Somebody says, yeah, I was just going to throw that out. Well, I'll take that. And my wife's like, no, you're not. Leave that here. Leave that here. Don't get me wrong. Don't y'all think that I'm just a big pack rat because I'm married to a pack rat. We're a pair of pack rats. So don't y'all be giving her nothing else. But we find ourselves chasing wealth and material possessions. And I have a storeroom that's a one-car garage. It's at my mother's house. I have one. Each one of my sisters has one. And my mother said, she told me one time, she goes, I was digging through there and she looked in there and there's junk. When we were going to go to preaching school and we were moving, we put a bunch of storage stuff in there because the house wouldn't sell with all this junk there. Instead of hauling it to the dump, we put it in there. And she looked in there and she goes, y'all sure going to have fun when I die. Y'all going to have to do something with all this stuff. And it's junk. All we've gone, we've hauled boxes. Darla will go down there. She'll come back. I brought more boxes of junk. We need to go through it and throw it away. Do what do we need to do? Get rid of it. Get rid of it. Get rid of it. So we have a problem when the accumulation of wealth or the pursuing of material things keeps us from finding our spot in the race
or keeps us distracted from the race. You understand? Like if we're in the race and we're going, wait, what is that? And we're over here and the race is going by. It's going without us. We're letting life pass us by because we're too busy stopping on the side of the road to look at the junk to see if it's something I want to add to my junk. Material possessions, if you will. Paul says in Philippians chapter 4, verse 11, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. Do you have enough junk? I'm happy with the stuff I've got. I think I don't need any more. But what is the phrase? Well, that's not actually junk. That's good stuff. That's why I'm getting it. Here, he's not talking about when it says, I've learned in whatever state I am therewith to be content. He's not talking about where he is on the planet. He's not talking about his position on the planet, but rather he's talking about the state of affairs that he's in. If he's wealthy, if he's poor, or somewhere in between, he has learned to be content with that. This can be understood as this: I have had it good at times and I have had it great at times, but the greatest accomplishment I could ever hope for is learning how to be content when I have neither. And that's what the whole push is that we need to learn to be content. Can we be content with what we have? That doesn't mean that you have to settle. And sometimes we look at being as contentment as, well, I guess I settled for this. I just settled for that. I always settle. I'm tired of settling. I'm not going to settle. I'm holding out for the best. I want the best. I'm not going to give up until I have the best. You ever heard someone say of someone else, oh, he lost everything. Maybe in a fire or a bad accident. He lost everything. Oh, they've lost everything. They need our help. They lost everything. It's funny you never hear that at a funeral. You imagine a preacher standing up at a funeral and say, his death has come as such a shock, now he's lost everything. You know why they don't say that? Because it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at that point. It doesn't matter. Whatever he had, whatever he lost, whatever he gave, it doesn't matter at that point. All that matters at that point is what should matter right now. And is that as if he gained heaven. Not what he's lost here, what he leaves behind, but did he gain heaven? That's what we should be thinking about. And that's what because it's up to us. We decide, I need to be content with what I have. And you think about these missionaries that go overseas, and not necessarily within the church. I mean, some from denominations, and they've given up everything so that they can proclaim God's word in one way or another. I'm content with this. I'm happy with this. I can live with this. Paul was one of those people. Just a tent maker. I'm happy with this. This is all I need. I don't need anything else. We have grown accustomed to having things nice. I like having that. I like, personally, when I walk in the house and it's hot outside and I walk in and the AC is on, it feels great. I like it when it's cold outside and I walk in, the heater's on, feels great. That's what I like. I don't want to, oh, we're shivering. Well, get ready. We're going to have to huddle down by a tree and go to sleep tonight because we have no home. We don't want to do that. We want to better ourselves, but at the same time, there comes a time when we have to find a happy medium or a happy line to draw. Job's wife, when you think about that, Job's wife accused him of some things. Job chapter 2, verses 9 and 10. If you think about this, when you say he lost everything, there's no one that you could say he lost everything more than Job. Job literally lost everything, right? Well, not quite. Look at Job chapter 2, verse 9 and 10. Then said his wife unto him, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. But he said unto her, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all of this, did not Job sin with his lips? While it may appear that Job has lost everything, he actually has retained his integrity. She looked at him and she said, dost thou still retain thine integrity? Yes. He still retained his integrity, and that's not all he has. He still has a genuine love for and respect for God. Out of all of that, no matter what, you can take him, and that's what the whole deal was all about. Satan says, oh yeah, let me lay a hand on him, and then he'll really will curse. Let me afflict his body, and then he'll curse you. And Job never did. No matter what you did to Job, he maintained his love for and respect for God through it all. Well, God gave me some great things, and those things are gone now, but I still have my life, and I still have my God, and I don't need anything else. As long as I've got that, I can retain. And what did he do?
God blessed him over and over and over again. 1 Timothy, one more passage. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 3 through 6. 1 Timothy 6, 3 through 6. If any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing, but doting upon questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, evil surmisings, perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds and destitute of truth, supposing that gain is godliness. From such withdraw, from such withdraw thyself. Listen to this. But godliness with contentment is great gain. The key passage, but godliness with contentment is great gain. The great gain should be our ultimate goal. It's not coming because of godliness, but comes alongside godliness. Is impossible without godliness. Maybe it's time to slow down on our quest for more things and focus on godliness and contentment in our lives, and perhaps things will start looking better. And I'm not saying things are looking bad, but we look at this and God's telling us this is how things will get better. This is how it is supposed to be. Godliness with contentment is great gain. If you have any need, the message is yours. Won't you come while we stand and sing the song that's been selected?